WCBN FM Ann Arbor.
I'm T. Hetzel, and today I'm so happy to have Jeff Cass here in the studio with his latest, just out with Dezank Books, well, recently, this spring, True Believer. Jeff, welcome. I'm so glad to see you.
T, I'm a big fan. It's very exciting to be here and to talk about poetry and writing and the world, so I'm excited. This is going to be awesome.
Thanks for choosing today's songs. And Jason, thanks for pulling them so we can play them today. My Adidas, let's talk about this one. Why this one, Jeff?
Well, I grew up in New York, just outside of New York City, about 20 miles from the Bronx, in the late 70s and early 80s, when hip hop was just beginning. And so these are the kind of songs I used to listen to when I was younger with my friends on the bus headed to a wrestling meet or to a baseball game. And I think that
I love that on the bus, even was it like a school bus sometimes?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we, you know, my students wouldn't understand, but like we didn't each have our own music systems piped into
our
head.
Someone had a boombox.
Exactly. And that was a communal celebration. So we knew all the words and we'd be taking the broom handle on the back of the bus and you know, banging it along with the beat. I shouldn't hit at the table there. Sorry. And, you know, and we'd be, you know, memorizing these rhymes. And I think really, honestly, like that's where a lot of my love for poetry came from, is just from the incredible language that you would hear from Run DMC or Grandmaster Flash or Grandmaster Melly Mel or any of those pioneers, LL Cool J back in the day. And so, yeah, I mean, that's part of why I love writing and especially poetry, is just because of growing up while hip hop was beginning and it was such a big part of our lives.
And this rhythm and this movement of language influences poems in True Believer too, Jeff.
Absolutely. Because I think this is a book that in many ways tries to excavate the influences of my childhood. So comic books is one of them, right? And reading Marvel Comics especially. But also, you know, the musical soundtrack was a lot of the classic rock at the time, especially the East Coast stuff like Springsteen and Billy Joel, and then hip hop. So, you know, when I thought about writing about what did Captain America mean to me? What did Daredevil mean to me? What did Spider-Man mean to me? In my head, it's getting mixed up with the music we'd listen to and vibe to when I was 12 and 13 and 14 years old. And so, you know, it became part of this book in a way too. Just the rhythms of hip hop are also the rhythms of comic books to me.
And so True Believer, can you talk a little bit about like how, because it's a book that navigates through the world of comic books, Marvel in particular, and as you're sort of alluding to, Jeff, but yeah, how did it start with that elegy for Stan Lee? Or
yes, so you know, I don't know if everyone knows, but Stan Lee was kind of the public face of Marvel Comics for more than half a century, right? And so he passed away a few years ago, and I do love the art of the elegy. I love to process losses and grief by writing about it and trying to think about what did this person mean in my life. And so I wrote this elegy for Stan Lee in a way that I was trying to not necessarily glorify like him individually, like, oh, this is Stan Lee. He, you know, he was great in his little cameos in the movies, but it was like, he was part of this phenomenon of Marvel Comics, which was a huge, epic story. And so much of what I think about the world comes from those stories, comes from the notion of if you're in a fight, you don't give up and you don't just believe that evil is going to triumph and despair is going to triumph, that you somehow try to find a way to hang in there and do your best. And you might not always win, but you just don't give up. You don't just say, oh, well, the forces of evil are too strong, I'm done, right? So I think that when Stanley passed away, I tried to write something in that vein that kind of talked a little bit about what Marvel Comics has meant to me. And I really liked the poem. And I was like, oh, this is pretty cool, you know? And I didn't think I was going to write a whole collection of poems that had connected to Marvel Comics, but I liked that poem. And then about maybe 6 months later, I was teaching a workshop to people who are struggling with addictions. And it was like a weekly writing workshop. And then one of the exercises I did was, well, like, you know, think of a song. Think of a song that you like and think about a memory you have to that song. And let's write about, you know, an experience you have with a song. And so what popped in my mind was the scene from the movie Thor Ragnarok, where Thor is kind of getting beat up a little bit. And then he kind of realizes that he's this incredible hero and he can come back. And his comeback is sort of accompanied by the Led Zeppelin Immigrant Song, right? And so I was like, all right, well, I'm going to write something about that. And I wrote this poem and it just had so much energy in it. And I was like, wow, this is like, I like this. And when I read it to the group of students there, they're like, whoa, that's so cool. I was like, okay, well, now I have two Marvel poems. What's going to happen? And so I started thinking more. And I, you know, I think I've said this in interviews before, but my previous poetry collection, Teacher/Pizza Guy, was about a year that I spent delivering pizzas for Cottage Inn right down the road from the studio here. You know, and
not
and,
far, a stone's throw.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know, nothing against Cottage Inn, but like I'm teaching all day long. I was working at the Neutral Zone 2 or 3 nights a week, but still couldn't quite make the bills work for my family. So I had this other job of delivering pizza 2 or 3 nights a week. And, you know, I'd be up till 4 or 5 in the morning in those shifts. You know, you're delivering pizza. You'd be shocked at like who orders pizza at 3:30 in the morning. But it happens. So I'm out there doing that. And then I have to go back to school at like 8 a.m. And, you know, so it was a crazy, tough, difficult year. And I survived it by writing poems about it, you know, like by things that would happen and just reflecting on that experience and making art out of it. But it's still a pretty depressing book. You know, I tried to find moments of light in that experience, but it's pretty depressing. And so I really, really wanted my next group of poems to be something more joyous, something more that's like, oh, let's talk about something that's uplifting, inspirational in some way. And I didn't know what that was going to be, but I wanted to write those kind of poems. And then I realized, well, I have two of them. They're both kind of inspirational. They both kind of got some good energy. Let's see if there's more. And then I started doing more Marvel poems and researching and watching all the movies, reading more comics. And,
what a good research to do.
Oh, yeah. Super fun. I mean, you see the stories very differently looking back now in your
completely.
50s than when I was like a teenager or even a preteen. But like, it's
but you
still,
have some of those memories of absolutely. that you can bring to it as like the layers for it.
Yeah. And you appreciate other things, too, that I didn't necessarily appreciate when I was younger. And I see some of the more subtle elements of the stories. And you know, that also kind of is exciting for me.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Well, you know, Jeff, since we're talking about Teacher/Pizza Guy, would you like to read like a poem from that to give a sense of it? Or
Sure, I can read a poem from it. You know, it was a tough job. So let me think. I think I'll read this one. So this is called Purveyor of Pies. And it's after a poet named Jeff McDaniel, who I really love it. And he's got a poem called Keeper of the Light, which is about a lighthouse keeper, which I think is amazing. And so I think the thing that this poem is trying to do is, look, you don't make a lot of money delivering pizza. It's not terrible. You know, I make $18 an hour on a good night, maybe 20. Not horrible, but you really don't make a lot. And it's hard work. It's a lot harder than people give it credit for. And it's the middle of the night. And it can be tough. So I think that you can't do it just for the money. So there has to be other reasons to do it. And so this is a kind of, I think this poem tries to get other reasons. Purveyor of Pies. Yes. I will interrupt your life, knock on your door or call your phone, and chances are we don't know each other, have no idea which channels our televisions kiss most frequently, or how many times the image of our bodies buried in dirt renders us unable to sleep. Yet, I know what you want to eat and at what time you made your definitive decision to order. Nobody's day is easy. If tonight you don't want to sift through the pantry, see what you can cobble together, if today you did not have time to shop for groceries, if this evening you just have a hankering for a medium barbecued chicken with sweet baby Ray's cranberries and red onions, no, I am not here to judge. Your life is your own. I will interrupt it, yes, but only for brief moments. We will meet on your doorstep or in the apartment foyer. Perhaps your dog will bark or attempt an escape to the beckoning wild. Perhaps your toddler will answer the knock and look at me with eyes both excited and afraid. I, a stranger at the gate, mean only the opposite of harm. Mean only I am here, arrived, more or less on time, to provide you with sustenance, to let you know when you desired, we did our best to fulfill. When I leave, you will shut your door, return your world to its ordered momentum. The only alien infiltration easily digestible, its cardboard container easily recyclable. I will move on to the next house, the next dorm, the next apartment complex, and interrupt another life. I am here. You conjured, and I appeared.
Thanks, Jeff.
I think that's the thing that was like redeeming. And, you know, in addition to like being able to write some poems about this experience, the cool thing about delivering pizza is people are happy when you get there. You know what
always,
I mean?
Yeah.
Like I'm teaching 30 teenagers a day in each class. So 150 teenagers a day. And look, most of the time it's pretty good, but there are days when they don't want to see me. They don't want to hear me say, we're going to talk about, you know, villanelles today, and or we're going to talk about how to integrate your quotations properly into an analytical essay. You know, but listen, when I show up at somebody's door with a pizza, everybody's happy. And at least for me, I don't know if this is like a universal experience, but for me, if I ever ordered like food to be delivered, there's always like a smidgen of doubt that it's actually going to happen. You know, like, really, are they going to show up? Are they going to like actually have what I ordered? And to like be there and be like, yes, this is what you wanted. I'm here on time. It's like a thrill, you know? So that was a part of it that's like, okay, that's somewhat rewarding. Even if they only tip me like $1.50, it's still like rewarding to know.
Tip better people.
That's right. But, you know, people want something and you show up and give it to them. And I think that that's, you know, that's a rewarding thing. So I enjoyed doing that.
Which is not about the money, even though we're joking about that.
No, it's not about the money, but also do tip. Yes.
I feel like that's a public service announcement, right?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, what's very interesting is like what I've always found is that the people who tip the best were the people, other people who are also working at the time. Right. So, you know, you deliver to a bunch of electricians who are working somewhere in the middle of the night, they tip well. Yeah. You deliver to the fire station, the police station, you know, it's the doorman at the hotel or whatever. They're tipping well. But, you know, sometimes families, you know, not necessarily, but the people who are on the job, they recognize you're working too. So that was always like, that was always a good gig.
Well, thanks for reading that poem from teacher/pizza guy, because it was, you were talking about how True Believer had to be then feel different for you. And you were also mentioning that in the Marvel universe or in comic books, people don't give up. That's what you're learning, right? Let's talk about that when we come back. We'll take a break now.
Absolutely.
And then we'll come back and we'll talk about that. Today on Living Writers, Jeff Cass is here. The book's on the table with us. You just heard a poem from Teacher Pizza Guy. And now Jeff's latest, True Believer, out with Dzank Books. I'm T. Hetzel. We've got Jason behind the glass. We'll be back. Welcome back if you're just tuning in. So glad you did. Today in the studio, Jeff Cass is here. And we've got True Believer, Jeff Cass's latest book out with Dezank Books, here on the table with us. Also teacher slash pizza guy on the table with us. But True Believer is going to be the book that I think we're going to focus on now. Just before the break, we were talking about how part of the spirit that you got from reading the comic books as a kid, a lesson that kind of absorbed into your selfhood, was don't give up. Like the evil is not, like, you don't have to give up against darkness. The evil is out there. It could be seemingly overwhelming. And it feels like this book also, and that spirit really connects with the time we're in now, where a lot of people walking around are feeling wrung out in so many ways. And some of it's to do with our politics in this country, and definitely globally.
Absolutely. And I wasn't necessarily writing this book with the idea of, like, everything's going to be upended in November of 2024 and we're going to have these forces of darkness that feel like they're encroaching. But I will say that I do feel like the book is timely in that sense, right? So I think ever since I was a kid, I've always had this feeling of wanting to believe in doing the right thing, you know, and whenever possible, and also wanting to believe in a kind of system of fairness, equality, and justice for everybody. And that these are values worth fighting for, right? These are not values that you can just be like, oh, well, it's not working out right now.
Or take for granted.
Let's just walk away. Or take for granted, right? And I think that the Marvel Universe is a continual battle in that way, right? There's always another villain on the horizon. There's always somebody else who's standing for...
Or someone returning.
Right, or someone returning. But there's always some force that wants to say greed is right, selfishness is right, othering other people is right, making decisions about who deserves to live and who deserves to die should be something that somebody who's powerful gets to do, right? And so for me, I always like, no, I'm going to be with, you know, Captain America. I'm going to be with Daredevil. I'm going to be with Spider-Man, who says, absolutely not. You can't just walk in here and decide that you can take over the city. You can't just walk in here and decide that you can put people in camps or deport them or grab them off the street or whatever. And so, yes, the moment that we're in now is a moment where we do need to find whatever way we can inside of ourselves to say, no, this is not who we are. This is not what the human experience needs to be. We don't need to give in to the forces of greed and selfishness. And so for me, part of that is just being a poet who wants to say, okay, let's go out to a bookstore on a Saturday night and I'm going to read you these poems, which are going to be about how we're going to try to be heroic and we're going to find whatever is in within us to, like, battle back. And maybe somebody will walk out and be like, all right, I'm battling back in my own way. And sometimes the best way to battle back is just, like, being kind and open and generous and living in the world you want to live in, if that makes sense.
Completely. Know. It does. Yeah. It can be hard to keep up the energy for that, but to find, like, reach out and not go too inward always, like, to find community that feel, because people are out there that are fighting and feeling this way. And yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it isn't the only way humanity exists, right? It isn't always about, well, I'm going to get mine. And if that's at the expense of you getting yours, oh, well, right? Like, I don't think that's how we've always survived as a species. And I don't think that's how we always will survive as a species. And when we talk about, you know, places like this station losing funding or like arts organizations losing funding, or science research, or all these other nonprofits, whatever it's going to be, right? Like, we can't just say, oh, well, that's how the world's going to be. Right. Let's just buy some Bitcoin and, you know, we'll go toast in the like VIP rooms in the airports or something. Like, that's not how we have to live, right? Like, let's gather some people together and read some poems, you know, read some stories, share stories with each other, and like, let's
make some music.
Absolutely, let's make some music.
And so the song that we just heard at the break, let's talk about that and how it's connecting to True Believer.
Well, so yeah, so when I mentioned earlier, like, the second poem I wrote for this collection was this one called Ode to the Marriage Between Led Zeppelin and Thor, right? And so one of the things that I love about the Marvel movies, right? And it's a different experience than reading the comic books. But in the movies, they can attach music to what's happening on the screen. And to me, that adds a whole other element to the story, right? So for me, like, I had my hype songs growing up, right? Yeah. Like when I was a wrestler, back in the day in high school, I would listen to my favorite move was the cradle, where you try to like lock someone up in like a cradle. And there was a song by Van Halen called The Cradle Will Rock, right? So that was the song I'd listen to hype myself up before a wrestling match, right? And I'd be going out there thinking, and the cradle will rock, you know? So to me, when I saw the movie Thor Ragnarok, and Thor is kind of like getting beat up and it looks like he's going to be down and out and, oh man, everything's just going to fall apart. All of a sudden, the Led Zeppelin, the drums start to play, and he realizes he still has this power within himself, and he comes back and he doesn't give up and he keeps fighting. So, all right, do you want to hear the poem? All right, I got to warn you, because I love music. I love singing.
There's going to be some singing.
Singer. I'm not a good singer.
It's going to be great.
Okay, because I think when we were just talking about making art and making music and bringing people together, I totally support people singing in public, even if they can't sing.
Completely.
Just want to like
sing. Yeah. Same here.
All right. Ode to the Marriage Between Led Zeppelin and Thor. When you unleash that driving guitar, those pounding drums, that ah, that sounds like a gas pedal on the last lap at a racetrack. That sounds like Nolan Ryan rearing back to throw his roaring fastball. That sounds like an avalanche about to cascade through a valley of villains we know. It's on. Doesn't matter if the bad guy's a titan from before the universe was born. Doesn't matter if he, she, it is constituted of pure dark matter, frozen frost giant, eternal elfin evil, or every cannon that's ever been fired in every war. Thor is about to do his God of Thunder thing, where his eyes blaze blue and his hammer swings like a scythe. And you, bad guy, ain't nothing but a sheaf of sugar cane about to be sliced, diced, and dissected. Ah, we come from the land of the ice and snow, from the midnight sun where the hot springs flow. Oh, don't we all wish we had that kind of theme song? That wedding of drums, guitar, and scream that pulls from our ribs the god hammer within. Oh, Thor, oh, Zeppelin, you were born to fight as one. Would that we too can find our rhythm, our own dancing, daring, our own twanging, throbbing tango of fight and not flee, our own rumbling Roomba. Release the hands from around our necks. We are too wild for these chains.
Yeah.
Kind of a battle cry, right?
Yeah. Wow. It's so different getting to hear, and for me, I get to see you too, yeah. But even and for everyone to hear, because it's when it's on the page, it's one thing. But how does it feel to perform that, Jeff?
Well, I think to me, poetry, the power of it is its orality, right? It's the sound of the writing. And there's not, I mean, I'm not trying to downplay the experience of reading a really beautiful poem on the page and having that solitary moment with the poem and you can reflect on it. That's also really beautiful and powerful. And I've had many, many incredible experiences in that vein. For me as a writer, we've been talking about community and creating art. You know, I like to be connected to that bardic tradition of going way back, you know, the griot tradition of like tribes all over the world, that archetype of somebody telling a story in a community, which is from brain to like ear to heart and like connecting on a visceral level. And so when I'm performing like that, that's what I'm trying to do more than anything. You know, it's not like, oh, hope you like this, buy the book. It's like, you know, hope you feel what I'm feeling.
And hope, just creating this moment.
Yeah. Like, let's, you know, who knows? Maybe you go home and you do what you do in your life that inspires you and you feel like you have found that song inside you, that theme song, right? That that unleashes your own God hammer to do what you're going to be able to do. And so for me, my favorite experiences in poetry are when I'm an audience member and I feel that from one of the other writers, or when I feel like I'm able to create that in a group of people, that feeling.
Yeah. Because there isn't anything that as a, it's one of those things that makes us human, like human beings or creatures, beings. I'm not trying, now I feel like I'm trying to be all, humans are number one, but I don't mean that. But I do mean it's something that can bring out what is the best, or what I believe to be the best in us as well. These connections, this energy among folks.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think you'd be hosting a radio show if you didn't believe that, right? Like, if that's what we're trying to do. You just don't see the audience in front of you necessarily, but it's still the same thing, right? Like, trying to reach out and say, you know, wherever you are listening right now, hopefully something's touching you in some way, right?
Yeah, that's like, I love radio podcasts, the intimacy of audio.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, and so that's, for me, that's what a poem really is powerful for,
with the audio again. Yeah. Like you said, the orality.
Absolutely. And I think that the, you know, the way that a rhythm can resonate, the way that rhyme can resonate, the way that repetition or alliteration or all those poetic techniques that everybody recognizes when you're reading it, but just like, what is the effect when you're actually hearing it, you know, mm-hmm. when it's moving inside you, you
embodied.
Know, exactly. And so, you know, I like feeling a poem inside my body too, right? And so it's kind of like when I write a book, right, like this, or when I wrote Teacher/Pizza Guy, it's like a project that takes, you know, however, 2 or 3 years to write or whatever, but for the amount of time that it takes to write, edit, you know, the book comes out, you do tours, you read, you know, you hope the book has as long a shelf life as it can, for that amount of time where like the book is a big part of your life, I kind of like want to live the book. And that means like live the poems. And that means like feel the poems in my body, right? So I probably, from the Teacher/Pizza Guy book, I probably memorized 8 or 9 poems. I don't really have them memorized anymore though, because the new book, True Believer, that, you know, I've memorized probably like 15 poems, is like, that's my life in the moment. Those are the poems I'm living right now. You know, and I don't know, I mean, someday hopefully there'll be another book and I'll be living those poems. But for now, these are the ones that are like in my body. So if you want to come see me read poems, that's what my body's going to give you for the most part.
And when you, do you ever read from the book, or are the poems that when you go to the places on tour or to bookshops or so, are those the ones that are embodied, the ones that you have memorized that you...
Yeah. I mean, I do read some from the book. I don't want to say that never happens. I mean, listen, there's a poem in here that's 11 pages long.
Yeah,
that's 20 more poems, you know. It's the thing about
the
thing.
That's the part two. Yeah.
Right? And it's a poem that's deeply personal. It's about the Jewishness of the thing, who's, you know, the new from a Fantastic Four movie is coming out pretty soon. I'm very excited about that. It's sort of about the golem-esque nature of this like rocky monster who's like a publicly Jewish superhero. And being, you know, a Jewish person growing up in New York, wanting to be an athlete, he's somebody who I identify with. So that's a very long personal poem. I don't have that memorized because it's so long. But I've never read it in public either. So I think if I do a reading maybe somewhere at like a Jewish community center or a temple or something like that, then I'm going to read it. But yeah, I, in general, I like reading the poems that are like part of my body probably more than I like reading the ones that are just I could read it out of the book. I don't mind doing that, but man, do I enjoy, because the thing is, if the poem's like in my body, then I don't know how to explain this in a way that doesn't sound like super cheesy, but I feel like I can like channel an energy that takes me out of like the moment and at the same time puts me in the moment more holistically, more authentically. So I'm not thinking about, am I nervous? Do people like the poem? You know, but I'm just like, I'm in the poem in the way that like, you know, Janis Joplin is like singing a song, right? Or Bruce Springsteen singing a song. And it's like, people are going to like it or not, but I'm going to do this performance and I'm going to live this poem right now. So like the energy of that is more life affirming, I guess, than the energy of, let me read you this poem that, you know, we'll both reflect on its like deepness or whatever. I don't mean to hate on people. I'm sorry. I don't mean to say it like that, but I'm just, you know, I don't know. That's just how I do poems. It's just poetry to me.
Well, thank goodness. Today on Living Writers, Jeff Cass is here. True believer. We just heard a poem out with Dezenk Books now. You've got Living Writers. We've got Jason behind the glass. We'll be back. Back. You've got Living Writers on WCBN FM Ann Arbor. I'm T. Hetzel, and today, so glad to have Jeff Cass here in the studio before he heads over to do some umpiring at the Michigan Stadium.
Yeah, it's a, you know, it's like a 16U game later on. You know, I actually coached freshman baseball at Pioneer as well, assistant coach, and the season just ended, so now I'm into the umpiring portion of the baseball experience for me, because, you know, it's always a side hustle. You're a teacher, you know, you can't just think your paycheck is going to somehow magically grow, because it's not. So, you know, you gotta find other ways to, you know, just help out. So I'll do some umpiring, and, you know, I'll be out there tonight. It'll be fun.
And it's like, and baseball is just part of you, like you were just saying too, Jeff, you know.
Well, sometimes when if I'm doing a reading, students ask me, you know, like, well, what made you start writing, or why do you like writing so much? When I was a kid, I wanted to be the center fielder for the New York Yankees, right? So I'm also 5'6". I know you can't tell that over the radio, but like most coaches are not looking at someone who's 5'6" and say, hey, that's my starting center fielder. So, you know, I would go into the gym and work out and try to get really strong, and always felt like I could go up against the like bigger guys and not be afraid. And all that comes from like Marvel Comics. You know, it's like, all right, so you have to battle against the Hulk and you're Daredevil and you can't even see, and the Hulk outweighs you by who knows how many hundreds of pounds, but you got to like go do this and you got to do it. So like, that's kind of like, I always felt like, what can I do? How can I be stronger? How can I be better to try to become this great baseball player, right? So when I was in college and, you know, like basically like the 40th man on the 40-man roster, i.e. the bullpen catcher who just warmed up pitchers and never saw the field, it was, you know, it was a challenging experience. But I also tore my knee in the outfield.
And like, that's in True Believer.
That's in True Believer as well. And I tore my knee. And that was my sophomore year in college. And I kind of knew after that, that my baseball career was more or less over. Right. And so that thirst for competition, that drive that says, I want to go up against the toughest people, the biggest people, and show that I can measure up and I can be there with them. I don't know if it's like a Napoleonic complex or what, but like, you know, the little guy trying to like battle, right? But that feeling of working so hard and being so present, and like, because it's going to take every single part of me to go against this guy who's throwing 90 miles an hour and is 6'3", then once that's gone, you know, because I can't play anymore, where else am I going to find that activity, which is like taking every part of me? And the thing that feels the most like playing sports at a high level and trying really hard in the athletic field is writing. It's getting into that zone and being like, oh, create some character out of nothing and try to like create a story for this person and try to like see where it goes, or write a poem and get into the rhythms of what you're talking about and try to dig underneath the idea and see what else is lurking underneath the surface. And being at that keyboard for 2 or 3 hours straight and not looking up, that's the closest thing I've ever felt to playing center field in a 9-inning baseball game, right? So as a result, in everything I write, there's always, I think, that element of like sporting competition on some level in some way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in True Believer, we've got the comic book world, but it's interwoven, as you're mentioning, Jeff, with your personal story.
Yes.
That's in there as well.
Yes.
And so this is how it's True Believer is moving.
Yeah. Because, you know, look, I could write a poem about the Hulk, or I could write a poem about Spider-Man, right? But if there's no like personal connection on some way, what am I really doing except just sort of being derivative?
Like describing.
You know, like, yeah. So, you know, I think that when I look at, and I consider this a whole book, ekphrastic art, right? So it's like art based on other art, right? And so it's me looking at, you know, this picture of the Green Goblin, like flying across the sky with its glider and the exhaust coming out of it. And such an iconic issue, image from Marvel Comics. What does it mean? You know? And so I wrote this poem about Osborns and what is the Green Goblin really? And I'm like, I think at the heart of it, the Green Goblin is really like jealousy, envy, right? And like this exhaust that's trailing from the glider is all those like nasty feelings we have, and like the kind of toxic gases that come out of us when we're feeling jealous and envious, right? And so I kind of like think about how that art looks, and then like, what does my poem do to kind of understand that? And then think about my own life. When have I been envious or jealous? And so, yeah, like it all kind of weaves together in one way or another. I mean, I think there's a poem in here about Bullseye, right? So Bullseye is the villain that often fights Daredevil, but sometimes Spider-Man. And he's got the incredible skills that anything he throws can be lethal. So he could take this pen you're holding, right, and see, you know, Jason through the glass there. And he can throw the pen so it pierces the glass and then pierces his heart, and that's it, right? So,
don't worry, everyone. Jason is not harmed, right, in the making of this hour of radio.
Right. So, but Bullseye also doesn't have any superpowers, right? He's honed those skills. He was like a baseball player, but he was like bored of playing baseball because he was always throwing no hitters. And he's like, okay, he honed those skills through thousands and thousands of hours of practice, right? So he became this person who could take a playing card and use it to like slice someone's jugular vein, right? So for me, as someone who put hours into baseball and could throw the ball pretty decently with some, you know, accuracy, I'm like, this is the guy who's got my skill, but he uses it for like assassinating people.
For ill.
Right? And so like, okay, if I write about Bullseye, that poem took the form of like an epistle. Like I wrote him a letter. Cause I'm like, Bullseye, like what, why you do that? You know, you got these skills. What inside you is so broken that you're going to take them to kill when you like, this is the closest superpower that I could ever have, is throwing things, you know, accurately.
Right.
And so that story kind of winds my own stories about throwing things with his stories and what he does. And that's kind of like weaving the personal into the art that's already out there.
Yes, and also another form that you're playing with in right. True Believer. Like you've got villanelles, you've got guzzles, right? Like there's a limerick, which I was so glad
really?
To see. Yeah, interesting. I love a limerick. Okay. I hats off to folks that can do a good limerick. I'm glad you put it in there.
Well, listen, I put three limericks in this book, and limericks, in many ways, can make your book unpublishable. Right? Because a lot of people consider that doggerel. It's, not very...
What do they know?
...sophisticated verse. But for me, it's like, okay, but Marvel Comics is that, in terms of, like, novels and in terms of stories. Like, this is an epic story that's spanned more than half a century, that contains thousands of characters and, hundreds of conflicts. And so Marvel... which, it's not necessarily the same now, but like back in the day when I was in the 70s growing up and I was reading a lot of comic books, that wasn't necessarily like just commonplace. Like a lot of parents be like, no, you're not reading comic books. You need to read classic novels. You need to read actual literature. And you can't just like read comics. That's brain rot. Or, well, not to use that contemporary phrase, but like that's sort of like equivalent to that today. And so to give my parents credit, they're like, this kid loves comics, he loves to read, let him read the dang comics, and that's why I dedicated this book to my parents, because they allowed me to do that, right? And read it. And so I forget where I was going with this, but I think this sort of like journey of the imagination for Marvel, many people still don't consider a comic book literature in the same way that people don't necessarily consider a limerick a like poem of high value. So for me, when I was like, listen, if I'm going to write poems about Marvel Comics, and Marvel Comics is in some way a kind of like, I don't want to say like a middle finger, but it's a little bit of a like, you don't consider us literature? Okay, by the way, our movie just, made more billions of dollars than any movie in human history. So, people love our stories. So I'm like, in the spirit of that, I'm like, well, you know what? People do love limericks. So if I want to say, what's my Red Skull limerick? I think I'm trying to remember this one. There once was a man diabolical, evil in every atom and molecule. He schemed year after year to make Cap disappear, but fashion only a lack of hair follicles. I'm like, okay, this is fun for me. It's goofy, but it's fun. And like Marvel is fun. And so why not put limericks in what I still consider to be a serious poetry collection? But, I'm like, okay, we can have a moment that's goofy like that. Marvel movies do it. Marvel Comics do it. That's kind of its place in the literary universe. So
yeah, it only makes sense, because then you're actually, it's a nod to the genre, as you're saying.
Exactly.
Too, Jeff, right? It's part of that, mapping it onto poetry. Yeah,
exactly.
Hey, let's take a short break and then we'll be back. This one will be really short, folks. Today on Living Writers, Jeff Cass is here. I'm T. Hetzel. We'll be back. Welcome back. You've got Living Writers. I'm T. Hetzel, and today on the program, Jeff Cass is here. We are winding down, which I can hardly believe. So before we do, we've got more to say, obviously. But here's Jeff's bio. Jeff Cass teaches 10th grade English and creative writing at Pioneer High School in Ann Arbor, Michigan. He's the award-winning author of Knuckleheads, Independent Publishers' Best Short Fiction Collection of 2011, as well as two previous full-length poetry collections, My Beautiful Hook-Nosed Beauty Queen Strut Wave and Teacher/Pizza Guy, a 2020 Michigan Notable Book and runner-up for a Midwest Book Award. He is the winner of the 2024 Toledo Museum of Art Ekphrastic Poetry Contest, we can see why, and currently a featured poetry instructor with the Michigan Learning Channel. He's taught poetry classes and workshops to thousands of students and is a recipient of a prestigious 2023 Jack Hazard Fellowship for writers who teach in public schools. His newest poetry collection, the one we've been hearing about today, True Believer, was just released by Design Books and consists of poems that spin around and through Marvel Comics and the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Jeff Cass, everybody. Ann Arbor's own since 1997, that's Jeff right. Cass. I'm glad you moved here, Jeff.
I'm glad I moved here, too. It's a great place to live.
And so, like, you're a teacher.
Yes.
And this is something that you were a teacher before you moved here out in California, but you teach here at Pioneer High, sophomore.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, it keeps me young. It keeps me kind of thinking in a forward looking way. Right. And wanting to always be better at what I do, because teaching becomes more and more challenging every single year. And so I feel like writing, and the honest truth of it is I do a lot of my writing at school. Like when I'm having students write, I also write with them.
Which, that's great as part of your teaching practice.
Yeah,
I think so.
I think it models for them, you know, that this is what a writer looks like. And for me, I mean, we've talked about rhythm and stuff. What a writer looks like for me is often like tapping my foot, bopping my head up and down while I'm trying to write something, you know, so they might look a little weird to them, but you know, I'm like, this is what a writer looks like. And when they know if I'm teaching them how to write a poem, or if I'm teaching them, this is what it means to use a specific sensory detail, or this is what it means to like edit a piece of writing and, you know, cut out any extra language, they know that's coming from a place of, I do this in my life. It's part of who I am. And so it's not just me saying, here's what writers do. You know, it's like, this is what I believe. This is what I live. This is what I love. And I think that does have a positive effect many times on my students and encourages them to take their writing really seriously.
And it's about community too.
Absolutely.
It's like you're making it like a non-hierarchical, in a, I mean, well, that was taking it way too far. But a writing with is like making it different than being the one that's always standing up and saying, this is the way.
Yes.
And I think you're trying.
Absolutely. And I think,
and
you
there's
know,
the
I think
unknown
you,
for you too.
Right. And you hear these horror stories about professors who run these writing workshops in a way where their goal seems to be just like tear down the young writer and destroy their ego. I would never want to do that, right? I've got a 14-year-old kid who hates reading books, right? Who thinks that no one cares about their story, what they've been through, what they have to say, right? If that kid somehow has the courage to like write a poem and read it aloud in the class, like what kind of human being am I if I'm like, no, do this, do that. That stinks. That's terrible. You know, what I want to be doing is like, wow, there's part of this that I love. Look at how courageous you are. Look at this imaginative moment you have in this piece. Look at what you're trying to explore. And I'm saying, you know what? I'm trying to explore too. Here, listen, I wrote this line. Is it any good? What do you think? You know, and that way it empowers them. And I share my work with my my students all the time that way, partially for that reason, but also because they give me good feedback.
Shout out to all the students.
Absolutely. And you know, it's funny because, you know, I students love to make fun of how old I am and how clueless I am, right? So like, I forget, we're today in creative writing, somebody was sharing a poem. I can't remember what it was about in the moment, but like, you know, and they all laugh when I ask a question because they're like, you weren't paying attention. You didn't get that. You don't understand that. And I'm like, no, I think I just want a clarification so we can all kind of get the impact of it. But they laugh like, you never get anything. You know, it's like, you're right in that way. It feels more collaborative and it doesn't feel like I, teacher, font of wisdom, am going to, you know, spill all over you all this experience and wisdom that I have. But instead, we're going to work together and see if we can create something powerful. And I think that is much more exciting for me and for them, right? Like, I don't really tend to have a ton of ego in class because, you know, this kid's going to be checking his phone under the table the moment I'm not paying attention to what they're doing. So, you know, I can't just be there acting like, oh, listen to every single thing I say, because, you know, that's just not the way life works.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking about what you're saying, Jeff, and connecting it back also to listening and the experience of reading from True Believer, poems in True Believer, and listening to you. And we talked about how you've got like the comics, the world of Marvel and the comic books. And then we also talked about how you are in it, like your narrative, your personal story, and how you're connecting and being part of that world or the connecting to it. And I think it's interesting because what you're also doing in this book is bringing the reader into it, inviting the reader to take heart or to take courage or to take action. In the poems, the poem often turns to the reader directly. And I think that's great because that feels like so Jeff Cass, you know, because it's like your ethos of community, and creating the experience and even talking about poetry readings. You didn't start with your own performance. You got to that after you started with listening to another poet and feeling that energy from them. And so just having that is really, that's the kind of spirit that I think this is what True Believer has.
Well, you know, I mean, it's interesting that you say that because like the first three readings I did with this book, right? So the first one, like the release was at Pioneer and I had some students read before me. It was in the little theater and we had like 200 people there or something. It was great.
Wow. But that's wonderful.
Just before I'm going to go on, a student gets up, reads a poem. And this is a kid who basically his sophomore year, he missed most of the whole year because he was in the psych ward at U of M, suicidal, very depressed all year long. He reads a poem basically talking about how when he walked into creative writing as a junior, he just wanted to get a credit, get through school. He hated school. Somehow fell in love with the class, fell in love with writing, loved the atmosphere of the class, loved that somebody wanted to listen to him, wanted to give him feedback, believed in him. And so when he, I'm kind of choking up now talking about it, when he read this poem, honestly, afterwards, I had this whole set of poems I was going to read. I really didn't even care about reading my poems out of my brand new book. I was like, okay, that's really the poem of the night that matters, not mine. And then the next meeting we did a week later, which was at the DeZank House in Ipsy, and we're trying to create this DeZank community poetry series that's going to be ongoing. We're going to have, you know, various poets from around the country and local poets read. And we want to just create a sort of poetry community there. So my daughter is there and she reads a poem as kind of one of the warm up poems. And then her poem is just like about how supportive it was for her when she took my class in high school and how supportive it was for her that she could come to my lunchroom in high school. And so I didn't want to read after that either. And then the third reading was like a Zoom reading of all my former students who are around the country who are now like poets in their own right. And they're reading poems. And I don't want to read my poems after that either. So like, I don't know. I kind of feel like I can't read poems after people anymore.
Maybe you should should start. I don't know. Jeff, that's... Well, do you have any readings that folks should know about coming up, or either in person or on Zoom?
Not right at the moment. Like, I'm going to Maine and doing some stuff out there, and I think I'm, you know, but I'm, yeah, I don't really have anything locally right now coming up, so I'll, you know, hopefully soon.
But we'll try. Okay. Yes. That's always, yes, we'll be, okay, we've got 2 minutes. Do you have a poem for us to go out on?
Let's go out on this poem. It's just about, it's an ode, it's in praise of the Pym particle. I've talked about my 5'6" self, and, you know, okay, in praise of the Pym particle. Imagine being able to shrink or grow. Like, oh, Jeff, oh, no, where'd he go? Hey, yo, it's Rich. You feel that itch? I'm chilling, twitched your eyebrows. What? How? Oh, wow, crawling now across your clavicle. Dang, this Pym particle is radical. No? You think you can slap me like a bug? Be defiant? I flip the script. I'm towering giant. My massive dome busts your house roof. You're terrified now, you timid mouse. Oh, I'm even bigger now, you mini louse. Whoop, call the choppers in, but they can't shoot me. Sorry, shrank again, dancing on the tip of your EpiPen. I'm guzzling pimpinephrine, the quantum realm. Hella zen, meditating, levitating, pass Shaq the Pym, Daddy Mac dunk on every rim. Thanks to you, Hank Pym, I own the gym. People in the bleachers tweaking like, oh, who's him? He's that dude in the Ant-Man suit. Try to smoosh him with your boot. Oh, shoot, scoot, scoot. Now he's under the tree root. Your brain falling out your head. Need a parachute. The point is mood. He's growing massive brute. The huge galoot too astute. Angles all acute. Sharper than a kitchen knife. A windmill scythe. Never know where I'm gonna be or what height. I own the lows and highs. Now you salty like McDonald's fries. Forget Bill Nye. Who's the super fly science guy? Can't be spotted by the human eye. So sly. Mini spy. Oh my. Hi. Now Goliath in the sky. Yeah, a little hip hop in there for the end, right?
Thank you, Jeff.
This is awesome. It's so fun being with you.
Thanks. So fun to be with you. So what a lovely afternoon. Thank you, Jeff. Today on Living Writers, Jeff Cass, his book, True Believer, Poems, out with Jazank Books now. Thanks to Jason Adam Voss for engineering. Thanks to everyone for out there listening. And thanks to Mom, too. Good night, everyone. I'm T. Hetzel. Until next time.
today, more parallels. St. Louis Blues by Miff Mowell in 1944 and the original Dixieland Jazz Band version in 1921.
Jazz Revisited.
Hello and welcome to the 21st century edition of Jazz Revisited. My name is DJ Tone, and it's my privilege to bring to you this show originally broadcast in 1967, now on WCBN FM Ann Arbor.
Jazz Revisited, a review of the first three decades of recorded American jazz, 1917 to 1947. The artists and their music. A program produced at the University of Michigan. And now, here is your host, Hazen Schumacher.
W.C. Handy is usually acknowledged to be the composer who first set down on paper the blues that had been around for a number of years. And his greatest, of course, was the St. Louis Blues. We're going to play two versions of that some